You are now listening to the Two Dads Run podcast, just two dads who run, talking about running and being dads and some other stuff.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Two Dads Run podcast. And this is Kevin.
This is Gray.
What's up, Gray?
Not much, man. How's it going?
Dude, it is going well. I'll tell you that, you know, I'm just really excited about this episode. I know we...
Hell yeah, me too.
We had to cut a lot of things off from our personal schedules to make this happen. And you know, we really were really excited to, I guess, have her speak with us.
Yeah,
and we wanted absolutely. To accommodate her schedule. So,
you know, yeah, just guys, excited. Just a peek behind the curtain. One of the most difficult parts of this entire thing is trying to juggle everyone's schedules because we're all incredibly busy professionals in our own respective fields. And sometimes, you know, and a lot of us are parents as well on top of that. So sometimes getting schedules to match up is very challenging. I think this one took several tries at it before we could finally nail one down, but I was glad we were able to do so. This is yet another person that we met during our trip in Baltimore. I had a blast speaking, you know, with her and talking nutrition and things like that. So it was a lot of fun. Knew we had to have her on the show. She got a podcast of her own now. And she was just fantastic. So this interview was conducted several weeks ago, just in case there's any continuity, any kind of current events that we spoke about that may be no longer current, but hey man, that's what happens. Life just kind of gets in the way sometimes. So
no, I agree. And so, you know, the cool thing was, is like, it can be done.
It can be done.
We didn't want to necessarily give up on it, but you know, it was really cool. I mean, to have with her background being a sports dietitian, I mean, she even called herself, she's a nutrition geek, but
who is it? Who are we talking about?
I mean, Megan Featherston is who I'm super excited.
Feathers, AKA Feathers.
So definitely very excited just because of how much knowledge that she has. I mean, she's a mom, which has kind of been the theme with a lot of the athletes and people in general we've been speaking to is, you know, when us as parents have responsibilities that includes the kids, our priorities are always put on the back burner and it doesn't have to be the case. And that's been the neat journey that we've had. We've been able to meet those type of people to really kind of inspire us, but then to just really gain knowledge and network with. And she was super fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. To speak incredibly with. Smart and really knew her stuff. And it was really awesome to, as at being kind of in that realm as well, my professional life, it was really kind of neat to hear scientifically backed information regarding nutrition and race planning and all of the things that go into it. You know, we always say you can't out-train a bad diet. Your body is a machine, especially for those of us that compete in endurance sports. And so like our cars, you put crap fuel in, you're going to get crap performance out. And to really just hear it drilled down in our conversation was really a lot of fun for me. So I really enjoyed our conversation. I'm excited about it. You know what else I'm excited about?
What's that?
This badass new studio we got going on.
Oh,
echo free studio. It's very festive. I'm looking at Frosty and a Christmas tree over here in August.
Yeah, we are on, we're in the third floor in the bonus room. And no, we will. I mean, it's gonna be Christmas.
So I
no
love
sense
it.
Of putting.
Hey, it, no, keep it
putting
out.
It away.
Do
not
it.
Many people get to see the storage area up here, but you can definitely feel and hear the difference.
Absolutely. I think you guys are. In case you can't tell already, there's the normal Two Dads Run podcast echo is no longer around, but you'll hear it pop up again in the interview. As like I said, this was done a couple weeks ago, so.
Yep.
Kevin and his wife, Adria, have been so gracious as to allow us a space in their home, and we really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and, no, it's going to be cool. We're going to turn it into a podcast. And
real deal.
Or a podcast room.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, so we'll be excited to see that come. But so with this episode, man, you, I think, will walk away being a little educated about sports nutrition.
Absolutely.
Kind of hear some of her go-tos on what she likes to use. And then I thought, which was really neat, where I, my, not, I'd say, yeah, my biggest takeaway is how phenomenally well she can cook.
Yes.
And the pictures.
And dude, her recipes are legit too.
And they're very legit. Yeah, and you can follow them. And those are her recipes. I'm like, my mind, I wish I could cook. I could definitely follow recipes. I love cooking. But to the creative piece, the way that she does it, on a level she does it, I think a lot of people will be very interested in listening to her and following her a lot more. So,
yeah, absolutely agree. All right, well, let's get to it. Megan Featherston, everyone. All right, Kev, so before I introduce our next guest, remember a couple of weeks ago when I was like, yeah, we've had on shoe reviewers, pro athletes, et cetera, et cetera, and we had added some shoe developers, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so one that we did not have in there was a sports dietitian, and considering that, you know, kind of food is right up my alley, it was time that we fixed that, right?
I think this completes the full cycle of all that, yeah.
So joining us today, guys, we have our favorite sports dietitian, Megan Featherston. She is the owner of Featherston Nutrition and is also one of the co-hosts of the Fuel for the Soul podcast. How you doing today, Megan?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic. So go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
Thanks for joining us today. For those of our listeners that may not be familiar with your work, would you mind giving us a little background of what you do?
Not at all. Well, thanks for having me, guys. You know, I love spreading the sports nutrition knowledge wide and far. So appreciate you guys bringing me on to share a little knowledge here and answer you guys' questions. But I have been a dietitian for almost 12 years now, and I was running the whole time I was a dietitian and doing a lot of really dumb things with my own nutrition, like only drinking water on long runs, not taking gels, only taking one gel in my first marathon. And I'm like, wow, this didn't go very well, and dove headfirst into some of the sports nutrition research with the help of a amazing professor that I had in grad school for sports nutrition. And I literally fell like head over heels for it. So you guys will learn pretty quickly. I'm just a huge nerd. So I like to have reasoning and science behind like why we do things, right? I think as humans, we understand why we're doing something. We're just so much more likely to actually do it. So I really try to put out education for folks from a sports nutrition standpoint of the why, right? And let you decide what's right for you. But if you understand why, I'd hope that you're making like a more educated decision. So that's what I like to do from a sports nutrition standpoint. I work with runners all over the country and other countries as well from a nutrition coaching standpoint to really help figure out the daily nutrition in our lives and then also that performance nutrition piece leading up to whatever those race goals are, whether it's a half marathon, a full marathon, BQ, break four, break three, 100 miler, you name it. You know, it's so fun to work with people to figure out, you know, what that looks like.
Wow. Okay. So brevity is going to be a challenge for me today because this is, like I said in the intro, this is something that I'm definitely interested in. But you in your own right are really awesome runner, right? Well, what was you have some recent times from 2019. When was the last time you raced?
Yeah, the last marathon was 2019, Indy 2019. And I ran, a 2:57.
Nice.
And that was an hour and 1 minute faster than my first marathon. So my first marathon was a 3:58. So
wait,
I didn't run in college.
When was your first marathon?
When was that? 2009, maybe. And I ran a few marathons, and then I took a break to have some kids, and then I hopped back into marathon running in 2016 again. Yeah.
Very cool. So where'd you end up running your marathons?
The sub three was in Indy. Is that the one you were asking about? Yeah.
Was that which one was that in Indy?
The Indianapolis Marathon, which was, it's like the first weekend in November, and the year I ran it, at the start line, it was 26 degrees with like 15 mile per hour winds. Ooh. It was freezing.
So my wife is from Indianapolis, and I'm pretty sure I think I know the one. Was that the one over by, I believe, Fort Benjamin Harrison? I'm not sure.
The funny thing is, like, I get lost in my own town. Okay. So I would have no clue any landmarks, any point.
That's like my wife. So my wife is from Indy. When we went up there, when I first met her, so me being from North Carolina, she could barely walk out the door without getting lost. And it's still to the same day. When we go visit family, she's lost. But Indianapolis, great running community. And we actually have a lot of listeners from that area. But, you know, it's fantastic. And then they also have one during the month of May. And actually, if you've never done that one, that's a really big one. It's one of the largest half marathons in the country. It's the One America. I think it's just like their Indy half, and it's the race before the Indy 500. So you'll have some of the race car drivers such as Tony Kanaan and Will Power that race the Indy 500, actually run that course or run that race with just the normal competitors. So pretty neat.
And it probably won't be 26 degrees at the start.
I would hope not. No. Okay. But truthfully, I'm so sweaty and I like run real hot. So it was phenomenal race weather for me. I mean, I was fine with it. I had my earmuffs and my gloves on and my pants and my long sleeve shirt. Not how I thought I was going to be lining up to try to run my first sub-3, but hey, it worked. So
did the trick. So
yeah.
I mentioned Fuel for the Soul, something that I've been checking out recently. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where that came from?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, some of you are probably familiar with Believe in the Run.
Maybe just a little.
The group out of Baltimore, right? So when they first started their podcast, The Drop, you know, Meg reached out to me and was like, hey, we started this podcast. Would you be on it? I want to say I was episode like 5 or 6, like super early on in their podcast. And, you know, I didn't know who Meg was, you know, I think her account might've been private or something. So I'm like, all right, let me look up this podcast. Right. Cause, you know, flattering to you guys, I don't just hop on anybody's podcast. Right. So I'm listening to it and I'm like, oh my God, they're absolutely hilarious. So I wrote it back and I'm like, absolutely 100%. Like, let's get this scheduled. So after our conversation, both Meg and Thomas were like, hey, I think we might need your help. So I was like, all right, let's do this. So then we worked together for their build up to the Woodlands. And after that was over, they were like, hey, like we got something good here, right? Like we've got this podcast thing figured out and, you know, we want to see, do you want to do a spinoff? That's like, you know, all sports nutrition. And Fuel for the Soul was born.
See, I'm totally floored by this. I thought you guys had been friends for years. So that,
wow. I know the chemistry's good, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking from podcast host to podcast host, you're about 7, 8 episodes out? Cause we were looking at it the other day. Mm-hmm.
We have 7 published. Yeah.
So what are some of the neat things that you've learned along the way that you did not know about podcasting? And what are some of the things that you've learned about yourself? So you've challenged yourself to be a nutritionist. You know, going back even more, you know, you were a fantastic runner. You took some time off to become a mother of a couple kids. And so you think you know more about yourself throughout the journey, but I'm sure you've probably learned a few neat things about yourself with this Fuel for the Soul. Can you share, you know, how that journey's been for you?
Yeah. I say right a lot. Like when I listen to it, I'm like, Megan, why do you keep saying right? So that's the one thing I learned about myself. No, I kid. You know, I think I've been in more of a communication role as a dietitian my whole life. Like I've done presentations, you know, I've done talks for community, you know, that's something that I've always done. So I think I kind of just channeled that a little bit in the podcast realm. So I think I had that on my side that I was already pretty comfortable with the, you know, public speaking side of things. But the one thing that I've really learned and really grown in working with Megan and Thomas on this is trying to look at nutrition through a different lens. So I look at it from, you know, my standpoint, right, as a sports dietitian, but really trying to take that other side and kind of see how people are going to consume the information that I'm putting out there, I think has been one of the most enlightening and probably the most challenging things too, is to really understand, okay, how do I communicate this information to the crowd so it's useful for them, right? Like take that nerdiness down a level that it's like actually digestible information for all walks of people, people who are interested in the science, people who just want told what to do, right? And really trying to figure out how to communicate that best has been fun. And I think, you know, Megan and Thomas have really helped me you know, they come to me with questions and things like that, and it really lets me think about it in different terms. So I think that's, and that's an ongoing thing too. Like, I think that's something I'll still have to continue to work on.
Well, I will definitely second your first point in that whenever you do a start doing a podcast with regularity, it definitely shines a very bright spotlight on whatever your verbal crutches are.
Right.
Kevin's Kevin's is that's awesome. And mine is, you know, I don't even realize I'm saying it. And then there was one episode where I was listening. So I am a little obsessive when it comes to this show, and I will listen to every single episode 3 to 5 times on average. And there was one episode in particular, and it's usually when I'm tired or I'm not comfortable with the subject matter or the guest. I hadn't done my homework or whatever. And I must have said, you know, 47 times in about a 5-minute period. And I was ready to drive myself off the cliff. Just, I was so frustrated with myself. So yeah, you are definitely right there.
It is pretty crazy. Yeah.
So, you know, with your background, Megan, there's a lot of things that I really want to continue. And I know it sounds like maybe we're just kind of bouncing, you know, from one era to where you're at to an era back in the past. But in this question here, you know, and working with you, because that's the neat thing. And we've talked about it pretty much on every episode where I've been helping Gray, so Gray's triathlon coach, getting him to his first start line here in the next about month and a half. But what a lot of athletes, triathletes, but what a lot of athletes in general don't realize what the major discipline is the nutrition piece. And you have a lot of people, you know, that will go out and they'll take these online courses to become a dietitian, or they, you know, they've kind of, you know, maybe figured them, you know, figured it out through trial and error over the years to try and help athletes. But that's one area that as a coach, as a triathlon coach, I really kind of stay away from. And I really, any type of nutrition question, I always refer them out to somebody. But what is it that an athlete can expect in working with you, Megan?
I think you bring up a good point. So there's a lot of quote unquote nutrition experts out there. And I love that slowly but surely, right, the background of a sports dietitian is becoming kind of the gold standard. So, I mean, I had 4 years of undergrad, 2 years of a master's program. I had to be a dietitian for 5 years. Then I had to study for, I think it was 2,000 hours to be able to sit for the exam to be a sports dietitian, right? So just because someone's a dietitian and works with athletes doesn't mean they're actually a sports dietitian, right? Like, you have to actually sit for an exam and pass it every 5 years. So there's a ton of education, real life application, trial and error, and also a lot of staying up on the research to be able to continue to pass these exams. So I think it's really important, like, if you want the best, right, if you're researching a coach, if you're researching a dietitian, you know, look and make sure that they have the credentials of what you're looking to accomplish, right? We wouldn't hire, to your point, you know, a triathlon coach to work with us that is a backcountry hiker. I mean, they need to know the sport. They need to know where we're at. So I think, you know, that's important to be looking for. If we do want to enlist some help for nutrition for whatever sport our discipline is, right? Whether it's triathlons or marathons or whatever it is, 100 milers. So, you know, once athletes come to me, we spend, you know, a solid hour diving into them and their life and what they need to do, because I'm not somebody who comes in with a rigid plan and makes you try to figure it out. I'm going to make the principles of good, solid sports nutrition for the goals that you want to meet your life. We gotta make this work. I think we all know we need to fuel more. We all know hydration is important. We all know more fruits and vegetables are good for us. But I think where the magic is really trying to figure out what are they doing well in their life? What do they need help with in their life? And really helping them see how to execute that, how to make it work. So that's like step one. And then I think step two is noticing those performance benefits, noticing how we sleep better, how we recover faster, how we have less soreness, how we can hit faster paces, how we can be more resilient in a training cycle from doing these types of things. And then we dial in that performance nutrition piece. And for everybody, that looks a little bit different and takes a different amount of time. I always try to work with people like at least 3 months leading up to their race. You know, if somebody reaches out to me, like, I've got a race in 6 weeks. I'm like, we need a little more time than that. Really thinking ahead, if you're interested in working with a sports dietitian, I have a great network of a bunch of us. And we're all pretty similar in that fact that we like to spend some time working with people leading up to those big events.
So what would you say is your most, I'm sure you have a pretty diverse group of clients, so I won't say, mm-hmm. you know, what does your typical client look like? What experience level are they at? But what would you say is the most common uphill battle that you fight taking on new clients in terms of nutrition?
That is a good question. And I would say the two things that we really work to nail on is adequacy of nutrition throughout your day. So some people are eating enough, but their timing sucks. Right. So it's going to, our recovery is going to suffer. Our energy levels for females, hormones, you know, they're really going to suffer if we're not timing that right throughout our day and our training. So, and part of that adequacy bucket is eating enough. You know, a lot of athletes are under fueling for the work they're trying to accomplish. So that's a big area that we dive in with most people. And then the other one is that performance nutrition piece. So many people just haven't figured out how to fuel and hydrate for optimal performance. It is just such a, I guess delicate maybe is too strong of a word, but it's just something that's so personalized from person to person. You know, there's not necessarily a standard that's going to work for everyone, and there's a lot of trial and error with it, which takes time. You know, to your training, Gray, you know, in the triathlon, you have a couple opportunities throughout the week to really practice those long duration, you know, nutrition segments of training. But if somebody's training for a marathon, they might only have, you know, one chance a week to really figure this out. So we need weeks on end to really be practicing and honing in on it and talking about what worked and what didn't and really trying to figure that out. So I would say those two things, kind of the adequacy and then the performance nutrition, are probably where most people need some work.
So for somebody that, you know, from the outside looking in that might not consider themselves an athlete, but they've always maybe wanted to start their first 5K, and maybe they've had just bad nutrition throughout their entire life. So obviously they're going to be challenged to break a lot of bad habits. You know, this can be very intimidating to reach out to someone like yourself early on. Do you work with people that are interested in really just trying to change their lifestyle into maybe just having some assistance in picking the right choices on what they should eat, how they should eat, and maybe getting them into a sport? Or do you only work with athletes that are kind of mature in the sport and they just need that extra discipline to really take them to the next level?
I've had athletes all over the board. So I've been doing this for 3 years now, doing it nearly full time for almost 2 years, year and a half. And I've had everybody all over the board. I would say as my practice has grown over the last 6 months, it seems to be more of those more competitive athletes. And when I say competitive, I don't mean super, super fast everyone, right? But people who are like really into their goals and really investing a lot into themselves and their training and doing better and working towards those goals. I would say that a higher percentage of those types of athletes than some of the newbie beginners. But I absolutely have some of those on my docket as well. And I think it's kind of fun, right, to work with people all over the board, accomplishing different things. And for people who are just starting out making changes, to me, that's some of the most exciting things. If we haven't tried to dial in anything yet, when we make change, it's going to make a massive impact. So that room for growth of somebody who hasn't really tackled their nutrition yet is huge. Just like a new runner, you know, they're setting a PR every time they step outside their door, or every time they do a long run. It's the longest run they've ever done, you know, so there's so much that can be accomplished early on for some people. So if somebody's out there feeling like that or hesitating to reach out to somebody, just, you know, coming from my perspective, right, it's actually really cool to work with people that don't have a ton of background or haven't made a lot of changes in their nutrition in the past, and know that it doesn't have to be perfect to be successful. We just need to find where the wins are in that person's life to really start to change, to see those benefits.
So, I mean, that's perfect, because you go back to all these different people. What I have noticed in my work, in my career here, and especially since I've started dealing with healthier food, is that people make this way more complicated than it has to be. So making those small adjustments, and especially for a new runner, can be highly impactful. But I want to go back to Fuel for the Soul for a second. I was listening to one of your more recent episodes, and you were talking about nutrition and gastrointestinal distress in a marathon runner, and hydration, and how those things are kind of all interwoven. Can you kind of fill us in a little bit on that for some of the listeners that may not have heard that?
Yeah. So I think I have people come to me telling me they can't tolerate fuel during marathons and long runs. I can't take gels. They upset my stomach, or they make me have to go to the bathroom. I can't take fuel. I must run fasted. And, you know, the really cool thing is sometimes it might be the fuel we're taking, but the majority of the time when we take a deeper look, it's actually that we're getting too dehydrated before we're trying to take a gel. So if you think about it, you know, as our exertion goes up, right, that rate of perceived exertion, our heart rate goes up as the long run goes on, as a race goes on, what ends up happening is, you know, obviously our blood is preferentially heading to our skin to help try to cool off our body, headed to our muscles. So we don't have a whole lot of perfusion to our GI tract anymore, so we don't have a whole lot of blood going there to help digest things. So what ends up happening is if we dump a gel in a stomach with no liquid and we're dehydrated, it's either going to stay there and churn and turn and start to slosh, or it's going to drop right through us. So what we end up doing is really taking a look at that hydration piece and really understanding that a little bit deeper for the athlete. So what we do is take a look at sweat rate. So how much sweat are we losing per hour? And then if we want to take it a step further, we can look at sweat composition, because we know that sweat isn't just fluid. It's not just water. And I would say over 50% of the people that come to me are just drinking water when they're out there for long runs, long rides, you know, whatever it may be. And what ends up happening is we lose so much sodium that we can't fully rehydrate with just the water. We need water plus sodium. So, you know, taking that a step further from a sweat composition standpoint, we can look at sweat rate, but then we can also quantify how much sodium we're losing per hour as well. So those two things are incredibly important for somebody if they're losing a lot of fluid and a lot of salt, because we need to make sure we're accounting for that so that it doesn't have a negative impact or decrease our performance as training runs go on, which obviously then impacts how much fitness we can gain, but then also race day. You know, people that hit a wall, people that cramp, people that can't get through it because of GI issues, you know, a lot of this boils down to not just nutrition, but also that hydration piece.
So that's definitely a lot to unpack, and I'm just like mind blown, but no, that's great stuff. Cause I think a lot of people forget the, you know, the connection with not only the mind, but with the gut, healthy mind, healthy mm-hmm. gut, vice versa, how those two really kind of communicate with one another. Now, what would you, and I guess this is just kind of a very basic question, but you're talking about, you know, with running the marathon, what are some of maybe the go-to nutrition that doesn't have to be the exact as far as amounts, but what are some go-to nutrition that do you expect pretty much all your athletes to kind of have on a marathon? We actually have quite a few marathon runner listeners, and then people that actually have reached out saying, hey, look, you know, love what you guys are doing, anticipating on doing my first one. Definitely we want them mm-hmm. to connect with you, and we'll definitely give them that information afterwards. But what are some of the most common go-to brands and really just kind of nutrition that you want your runners, or you have your runners have when they're out there running?
Yeah, and that's the cool thing. There's so many options right now. There are so many options. And truthfully, I want us to find what's going to work for each individual athlete. You know, what I find is most people do better with a higher sodium sports drink. So to the point of making sure we have sodium and, you know, liquid in our bottle. I'm a huge fan of Scratch Labs, which is a company out of Colorado. So the owner of that company is like even a larger nerd than I am. So he is all about hydration science, and their products are a little bit higher in sodium than a lot than say like your standard Gatorade or Powerade. They're almost double, maybe even more truthfully, in sodium, which I find just works really well for people. And then they're like colored and flavored with like fruit powders. Like if you dehydrate fruit and like buzz it up in a blender, right? Like that's what they're putting in there. So they taste good. They're not crazy colors. And they just, I've never had someone have an issue or not tolerate the scratch hydration products. So that's definitely my go-to, you know, hands down what I'll recommend. Other things that are out there that are comparable to that would be like Tailwind, Noon Endurance. So it's their like endurance formula, it's higher in sodium and does have some sugar in it. And those are some of the more popular electrolyte drinks. Gatorade Endurance also is a little bit higher in sodium. So that's like the sports drink portion of it. But then we know we also need to make sure that we're getting, you know, 30 to 60 grams of carbs an hour when we're out there. So we can't get that through that alone. So a lot of people will use the gels or the chews. I think I'm a little bit of an anomaly. I actually use the chews. So I use the Scratch Lab chews and I used to use the Honey Stinger chews. I just find I have better luck popping those in and chewing them than taking a gel. I just wasn't taking enough gels. And, you know, that's the important part. We need to figure out what we're actually going to take enough of while we're out there to have it be beneficial. Hands down, the most popular gel that my athletes are using right now is the Martin gel. That's the one they kind of engineered with the hydrogel around it for Kipchoge when he was breaking two. So, you know, a lot of people are using that one. And then honestly, the next most popular gel that I see are the Huma gels, which was actually shocking to me for a while because they have like chia seeds and they're kind of all natural. So I just wasn't expecting them to catch on like they did, but I have a ton of athletes that use them and really like them. Of course, the old trusty is Goo, the GU. I think a lot of people still use those and they're great. You know, I'm actually going to do a post here soon about the difference between these engineered sports gels and like real food and kind of, you know, anything can work. We just got to, you know, find what works for us.
So listening to this show, I had an aha moment with the hydration episode and the gastrointestinal distress and all of that. I'm really, really good about, I drink minimum a gallon of water a day. I carry on around a 1 gallon jug and I finish it at least once per day, sometimes 1.5. So that was an aha moment. And then the other one, I felt personally attacked with the, it's not tough to not drink, have gels with you on long runs. I was like, I feel like Megan is speaking directly to me here because I am notorious. I have very limited experience with gel. So I have used Tailwind and I do like it. So that's got some carbs with it, but also that high sodium content, which is something I have been focusing on since hearing you talk about hydration. And then, yeah, the Martin gels are pretty money. I have tried those. I've tried one other brand. I was not a fan. It was a little thinner. It was more of like an isotonic kind of solution. And when you try to drink those things on the run and they're just so thin, I get it. I appreciate the fact that it goes down smooth, but man, it was all over me. It was all over my hands and on my face. It's all sticky. I was like, yeah, this is not going to be enjoyable for the next 2 hours.
Right. Especially if you're on your bike, right? Like the stickiness on the handlebars, forget it.
Yeah. So I'm not comfortable enough on the bike yet to try to take a goo or a gel at 27 miles an hour or whatever, but we're getting there. I'm, you know, that's something I'm throwing in a little bit of carbs into the old water bottle there and just trying to make do that way. But is there anything kind of out there in the world of sports nutrition right now that has especially piqued your interest? Any research that's upcoming or just, you know, something that's new that's hitting the scene that you're kind of excited about?
That's a good question. Gosh, I feel like things that might be new to I feel like that's a good question for you guys to tell me, because I feel like sometimes things are on my radar for longer and I don't realize they're trendy. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, wait, people are doing that. Like, I remember I gave a talk on intermittent fasting like 10 years ago talking about how this is the new fad diet and everyone looked at me cross-eyed. And then 8 years later, it was like the big thing. And I was like, oops, I guess I timed that wrong. So I think, you know, sometimes I'm not always 100% aware of it.
Well, and just my day to day, I mean, I'm hearing so much. So a little bit of background on me. I run a meal prep, healthy meal prep restaurant, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we're dealing with our customer is really kind of that first step into a healthier lifestyle. They're trying to get a grasp on tracking their macros and things like that. So I'm dealing with just a lot of really bad nutritional advice from Instagram and this YouTuber and that YouTuber. So a lot of keto for no reason and not really seeing any intermittent fasting, but I mean, definitely the keto thing. How do you feel about that in terms of a performance aspect?
Yeah. You know, we have to take a step back and look at our goals. So with all these fad diets, we need to define what our goals are and figure out if certain fads are supportive of our goals. So if our goal is to PR in a race, is to give all of our 100, you know, our best performance in a race, what we know for a fact is the higher the intensity of exercise. So if we're working at over 70% of our VO2 max, which we're going to be doing at the end of any race and perhaps most of the race for a lot of us. So, you know, even if we're racing a marathon, we're going to be close to that. We rely predominantly on carbohydrates to fuel that type of performance. So it would be counterintuitive for someone to go on a keto diet to try to PR in a marathon. Like those two things in my mind are not compatible from a science standpoint. If somebody is looking to trek across Alaska at a very low intensity with minimal carbohydrate fuel sources in their backpack, maybe a fat adapted keto, quote unquote, athlete would do well in that scenario. But I think it's just really important that we understand how our body is fueled depending on what goal we're trying to accomplish. You know, if this is a weekend warrior who is, you know, looking to get a little more active and wants to try the keto diet, it wouldn't be my recommendation that they do it. But if they want to try it, it's probably not going to impact their performance per se. But, you know, for some of these athletes, no matter what your time goal is, you know, it doesn't have to be someone who's super, super fast. If they're trying to push their body to a higher level from a fitness standpoint, they're just not going to be able to physically do that if they don't have carbs on board, which the keto diet is too low in carbohydrates to really support that.
Good, Gray. No, because we had a great conversation. This tends to be a topic on a weekly basis of what we discuss. And I know that he was dying to just kind of speak to you about that.
So what you're saying is muscle glycogen can go to zero in an endurance race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, 100%.
There's an inside joke behind that, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm like, oh, yeah, 90 minutes in, it's toast. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was actually reading an article recently that was talking about, like, how much energy we can mobilize from fat per hour. And it was, like, you know, 650 to 800 calories an hour from fat. Because it's a slow fuel source. Like it's just really slow to turn stored fat into ATP, which is our energy when we're exercising. But from carbohydrate standpoint, we can turn like 1200 to 1500 calories of energy out of carbs. So it's almost double if you look at it that way. So, you know, if we want to really kind of make this basic, like we can get twice the amount of energy per hour from carbohydrates that we can get from fat. So it's just so much of a quicker, faster fuel to be able to support those, you know, higher efforts.
So on the topic of fuel, you know, one of the things that, you know, I had fun and was really neat to share with my spouse on your page, Megan, is how well of a chef you are as well. So not only are you a sports dietitian and you help athletes become just super badass athletes, but you can cook and the photos of your food are just phenomenal. So have you always had this in you or did you really have to work hard like with everything else in your life? You know, so tell me about the cooking journey as well, because that's not easy at all.
Yeah, so I have always liked to cook. I actually like to bake more than cook, which might be evident in the massive amount of blender muffins that are on my plate. And I would say cooking was a skill that I developed a little bit later. I was actually a really, really picky eater as a kid, like really picky. So I really didn't start eating a whole variety of things at like a meal until college. So I would say from college on is when I really started to get into the actually cooking meals and understanding the balance of nutrition. And truthfully, once I realized, holy crap, if I put some turkey on that bread at lunch, I feel fuller longer and I'm not hungry in an hour versus just eating bread. It was like this aha moment in college, like, oh, wow, you can manage your appetite and feel much stronger if you add some protein to your meals. So I think, you know, that was probably where it all started. But you know, when I really look at it, I grew up, my mom and dad both loved to cook. So I think I probably grew up in an atmosphere that was a little more friendly to learning about cooking and embracing that. And I think a lot of us don't. So, you know, I can't negate the fact that I was kind of surrounded by that growing up. So I think that has helped a lot, you know, of exposing me to different ways to cook things, different flavors of things, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes I feel a little bit like an imposter because I'm like, I'm not a chef. I didn't go to culinary school, you know, but here I am putting out recipes. But at the same time, I truly, truly believe in order to help someone be successful in changing their nutrition, you have to show them how. So I've, you know, really been able to show people, look, you can eat well and you can eat enough by here's some examples, and then they can head to my site to find some different recipes. And, you know, if either of you have tried any of them, I try to keep it super simple. I don't want 1,000 steps. I want it to be fast. I want it to be easy. The portions are huge, so there's leftovers, or if you have a hearty eater in your house, you are set. So those are kind of some of the things I think about. And then I also try to make sure that if it's a meal, it has everything you need. So it has the protein, it has the carbs, it has the produce, whether it's fruit, vegetables, whatever it is. Because I think sometimes it's like, all right, if I'm going to go through the process of actually spending the time to make this dinner, I don't want to have to make a side and another side and get some vegetables. So I really try to compact everything we need as athletes into that one meal and just make it super easy. And then at the bottom of all my recipes, I'll put like how to adjust it. So for an athlete, maybe we do have to add more carbs, or like, how would you serve this to your kid? Or a lot of my athletes come to me and they're like, hey, you know, my spouse doesn't exercise. Like, how should they be eating? So there's something on there for just healthy eating for somebody that doesn't have crazy high energy needs. So really trying to figure out how to make it work for the whole family. Because as you guys said, I've got two kids. I get it. You know, we're cooking for multiple people here in a meal. And this way we can try to make sure that one entree, you know, can please everybody.
Well, I will say, number one, I've been in food and beverage for almost 20 years at this point. So, but I can't boil water. I cannot cook. My mom cooked for me growing up. I have an awesome mom. She made a hot meal for us for breakfast and dinner every single day of her life, of our lives growing up. And now my wife is an amazing cook as well. She makes amazing dinners for us every single night. And she was actually kind of the one who got me moving towards a more healthy lifestyle. Prior to meeting her, I was a bartender and ate fast food anywhere from 8 to 10 times a week, to the point where some of my friends and colleagues would make fun of me like, hey, do the people at McDonald's know your name and know your order, you know, when they see your car come up? So I'll try out some of your recipes and I'll give you some feedback on how easy they are. Cause I'm a complete dummy in the kitchen. Number one,
it's not too late to learn.
It's not. And that's one of the things that I challenged myself this past year. And now I think I've done a good job on a few meals. So I bought probably about exactly a year ago I was watching a commercial and I bought this app, but it's MasterClass. Have you heard of it, Megan? So it has, so it has all pretty much the elite of everybody in their field. It's more of an education type program, but you have, for instance, who are some of the,
they don't have Megan Featherston. So they don't have all the masters.
No, they have a lot of famous people. And it's like, if they're teaching their actual masterclass course. So it's if you're really trying to learn how to develop some leadership skills, or like there's this guy, Eric Voss, who is a former FBI hostage negotiator. And he talks to you about his story. And then, but he then talks to the teaches you how to actual sell, by really just understanding how to communicate with people. But with the chef piece, there's so many.
Was it Wolfgang
chefs.
Puck?
Wolfgang Puck has
the same as Wolfgang Puck
on there. So I like to challenge myself by watching and learning. I mean, I learned how to cut. So I guess long story to get to the question while I was going to get to you. So how do you challenge yourself? Because you have a nice variety from sweets. I saw there's like, I think at one point there were some brownies with a pretzel on there that looked great. I'm like, how's that healthy? And then I was jealous because maybe it was like right around the time we were up there, or maybe the week after, Megan, when we were up in Baltimore, that you had made homemade bagels, and Thomas and Megan, I think, were in your kitchen. Yep. Like, where's our invite for that? But how do you keep the creativity going? Is it all from within, or do you read or watch a few people out there?
So far, all my inspirations have been from my own kind of experiments and thoughts, and they pop up at random times. So I have like all these random notes in this one journal and then in my phone and in the notes section, because I'll be like riding my bike thinking about, oh, I need to try to make, because I feel like creativity comes at the most obscure time. So I really try to capitalize on it, because I'll forget like an hour later that I thought of it. So I do, I have this running list of things I want to try to tackle when I have the time. But then also a lot of my inspiration comes from my clients. So they'll talk to me about like a food that maybe they love, but I don't know if I should be eating that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we can totally make that exactly what your body needs, you know, and we rock that out, like the fajita skillet, you know, things like that, that are just super easy, that satisfy the things that people want, you know, to show you like, it doesn't have to be boring to eat healthy. It can be fantastic. So, and sometimes I have clients that come to me like, can you make this? So the overnight oats recipes actually were somebody that came to me and said, I want new overnight oats flavors. This is what I'm thinking. I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Let's do it. And so that weekend I got to work. I made three different variations. I kept them in the fridge. You know, I tried them. I made my husband try them. Like, what do you think? Which one's the best? I kept them in there for a few days so that I knew how long to tell people they stayed good without getting slimy. You know, I'm just a huge like geek when it comes to trying to figure these things out and help people. And so I would say, to answer your question, some of them are internal, but a lot of them are inspired by my clients.
Well, I will say that I saw that recovery bagel, egg, and avocado sandwich. I will definitely be trying that on Monday or Saturday.
It's so delicious.
After
it's everything you need. You
yeah,
know?
It looks amazing. yeah, looks perfect. And you've got me with overnight oats as well. I'll have to check those out because I'm a big fan of oatmeal. So I'm a creature of habit. And I eat the same thing for breakfast pretty much every single day. So I eat oatmeal a lot. And in the summer here in North Carolina, oatmeal is just not all that great. It's just too
yeah,
hot.
It is it's, cold.
It's,
yeah.
yeah, it's just too damn hot. I mean, it'll be 75 with a 72 dew point at 6 a.m. So it's just not fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I had one last question. So you have a lot of great things going on. I mean, the most important, obviously, being a spouse and a mother of two beautiful children. But with the podcast and then with the nutrition, you know, what does the future hold for you? What are some of the things that you are excited to be pursuing here within the next year or two, Megan?
Oh my gosh, so many things I wish I had more time for. So Thomas is trying to convince me to do a cookbook, so perhaps that would happen someday. Also, as I continue to grow my business, because I was actually still working part-time at a hospital until very recently, and then, you know, working nights, evenings, weekends, a few days a week on this, and I am 100%, you know, all behind, you know, Featherstone Nutrition now. So I really want to get some of my ducks in a row. As far as the business goes, so really kind of build out a little bit more of a strategic plan for it as far as how does this grow. You know, I would love to bring on some other sports dietitians. I mean, at this point, I'm turning people away or making them wait 5 or 6 weeks to start working with me. And I would really just love to at some point get to the point where if people are coming to Featherstone Nutrition for help, we will be able to help you, period. No matter what your goals are, no matter what you're trying to work on, to have some different coaches in line to really help with that piece. And then also in the background, kind of have some more supportive resources. So have some communities people can join to like learn from each other, not just their, you know, sports dietitian. And then also, you know, things like a newsletter that I just have not had the time or the backbone to get put together. So kind of some of those little things, just button this all up a little more and make it, you know, everything that I'd hoped it would be. And I think anybody who owns a business, there's always something we need to accomplish, trying to accomplish, want to do. So I've always been somebody that maybe this is a blessing and a curse, but I'm never quite satisfied. I always want more. I always want bigger, you know? So I think once I tackle those things, I'm sure there'll be something else on the radar, but I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Well, it certainly sounds like you're on the right track. So Megan, where can our listeners find you online?
They can find me. My biggest social media channel is definitely Instagram. So they can find me at Featherstone Nutrition on Instagram. And then my website is just the same, just featherstonenutrition.com.
Awesome. Megan, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for coming on the show. Really learned a lot today. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Megan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for checking out the episode. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. And as always, thank you to Eric Hollister, our producer down in Florida. Guys, you can check us out on all the social media networks. We are at Two Dads Run Podcast, and we'll talk to you guys next week.